We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Big news yesterday, as you know, TJ Watt signs a 3-year extension, 3 years, $123 million, $108 million guaranteed, $41 million a season, more than Myles Garrett. Your initial thoughts, Chris, whenever this news broke?
About time. I thought that this move was always going to happen. I know there was a lot of drama. Oh, should they trade him? Oh, should they not pay? They're paying the best defensive player in football, and that's who TJ Watt still is in my mind. And I know some people say, oh, well, he only had 11 and a half sacks last year. He's washed. He's done. He's cooked. Get him out of here. Who are the two biggest names at outside linebacker in like recent history, if you were to think of the two best outside linebackers in the last like 20 years? Who would you guys say?
For the Steelers or in the NFL?
Yeah, for the Steelers. For the Steelers.
Yeah. James Harrison.
TJ Watt. James Harrison.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
So before TJ, I would say James Harrison and Joey Porter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many seasons either of them had 11 and a half sacks or more? Each of them only have had in their careers one season where they had 11 and a half sacks and more. So TJ is so elite that his one down year when he has 11 and a half sacks is considered that, oh, he's done. He's cooked. Get him out of here. When the two guys that define the outside linebacker position in my adulthood, Joey Porter for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Joey Porter, who was a big part of winning Super Bowl 40, James Harrison, who at that point I was like, hey, that's the best outside linebacker 3-4 edge rusher this team's ever seen. He dwarfs what they do statistically. And that's where I look at T.J. Watt and I say, you still got to pay this man. And Doran, you were on it with the way you've been reacting to it. I get this. Some people say $41 million. That just seems like a lot of money. It is a lower percentage of the salary cap.
Yes.
$28.5 million per year that he got in his first extension back in 2021. This is not some obscene number. This is just what the current salary cap is today, because the salary cap has risen by almost $100 million since 4 years ago because of the 17th game they've tacked on and all the extra money the NFL is making.
I agree with you, Chris. I think Doran and I are both in agreement on this deal. I think one thing that's fair to look at it, though, and talk about TJ Watt and say, I want to see more production overall from the Steelers defense, you know, not TJ Watt individually. But I mean, how do they get more than the 11 and a half sacks? How do they improve the pass rush? I'm guessing some of that might have to do with moving TJ Watt around a little bit.
A little bit is TJ Watt moving around, but I think a lot of it is also getting better at stuffing the run, especially on early downs. The Steelers, and I talked about this a little bit on Locked On Steelers yesterday with our live stream, but the Steelers blitzed about 25.9% of the time last year. That's not a really low number, but it's low for what they had been known for under Keith Butler and Dick LeBeau's days. They kind of have been lessening on the blitz packages with Terrell Austin, and that's the thing I think they have to dial up. But to dial up the blitz packages, you need to force more third and longs, more third and eights, more third and nines, so that you can say, hey, we're going to get aggressive. We're going to send Patrick Queen from this side. We're going to send our slot corner from that side. We're going to send Peyton Wilson from this side. And so if teams are triple teaming TJ Watt, which they often do, that they're going to end up paying for it because there's going to be a free and fast rusher coming at the quarterback. And when you keep doing that, eventually they're going to say, hey, we can't let free and fast guys get through. We're going to have to hope that someone wins with TJ one-on-one, or we don't put as much time and investing into it. And I think that's part of what the Jalen Ramsey trade does, because Jalen Ramsey, instead of Minkah Fitzpatrick, as good as Minkah Fitzpatrick was for the Steelers and as great as he was at limiting the deep ball, you look at what teams have been doing to the Pittsburgh Steelers to slow down TJ Watt. They were hitting them with the quick passes. They're saying, hey, you know what? Their cornerback position is not their strength. We're going to hit them with so many quick passes to our receivers underneath that is going to make it so that his pass rush time is so limited, and we're going to keep double teaming him, triple teaming him, so that he can't get to the quarterback in time. But with Jalen Ramsey now and Darius Slay and Joey Porter Jr., now you have a trio of cornerbacks that you can say, hey, you know what? Go ahead and throw it quick to these guys. They're going to jam up your receivers. We're going to be more confident in this being a harder time for you. hoping that the quarterback holds on to the ball a little bit more. The quarterback holds on to the ball a little bit more. The pass rush has more time to get there. I think that that's part of the formula, but also that has to be with it. They have to stop the run. That's why I think they got Derek Harmon. I think that's why they got Y.A. Black. I think that's why they signed Dan Aquale. They want the interior with Cam Hayward to be more solidified, and they want the linebackers to be more free-flowing to stuff the run. If those things happen, I think the blitz will be dialed up more, and I think you'll see those numbers for T.J. Watt go up as well.
Chris Carter of the Post-Gazette and the Locked On Steelers podcast. Chris, do you think that the Steelers did bad business by not getting out ahead of this contract situation initially? Do you think they should have got out ahead of Myles Garrett, maybe potentially getting signed and signed T.J. maybe in early March?
It would have helped, right? You know, I think that if you're the Steelers, maybe you didn't see this as that much of a priority. It could have gotten the number lower. You would have been under what Myles Garrett signed. But there's also the chance that TJ's agent was like, "Nah, we see where the trends are mm-hmm. going." And you know, and like we're saying now, back then, I wasn't thinking in the ways of like, okay, I didn't see what the salary cap was set at, right? When I looked at what Myles Garrett signed, my first reaction was, that's a lot of money. And then I looked at their salary cap, and I was like, oh, wait, no, that's just basically the going rate for what edge rushers go when you think proportionally between how much percentage of a salary cap a player gets paid. That's what people need to look at, not raw numbers. Mm-hmm. And again, when you look at even the $41 million that TJ is making, that is a slightly smaller percentage than what he got when he got paid $28.5 million 4 years ago. Same thing for Myles Garrett. His contract is around the same rate. So I think that that's the thing here, is that people need to understand that's the going rate. So the Steelers could have gotten out in front of it, and maybe it would have been 39, 40. But go look at Max Crosby's contract, right? The prices just go up because these agents, they know the money, they know how the salary cap works. I think the Steelers still would have paid TJ around the same, maybe just $2 million a year less or something like that. So I don't think it would have made a big deal, but maybe you could have just avoided adding the cherry on top that they did.
I like the length of contract, Chris. I like the fact that they didn't go 5 years. I thought it was pretty reasonable for both sides. Like, TJ's obviously getting paid. He's getting guaranteed money, what he deserves. But the Steelers aren't hamstringing themselves. They've given themselves flexibility on the back half of this deal. Curious what you think about that. And also, I mean, what else did the Steelers need to do this offseason? Safety, wide receiver, like where? They're probably not done, I would imagine. Where does your head go?
So first, I agree. I thought that the length was perfect. I thought 3 years tacked on to his current year that's left on his contract, that's exactly what you wanted. The way I look at it is that, like, we're all presuming, right, that the Steelers are going to draft their quarterback of the future this year, and if they hit on it right, they're going to want to pay that guy big bucks down the line. By the time that guy's contract comes around, Cam Hayward and TJ Watt most likely have retired from the NFL. So they can spend right now on keeping the players that they find central to their organization, not just as far as player-wise, but as far as leadership-wise. And I kept telling people when they were like, oh, Chris, I don't know if this is going to happen. When I talked to Nick Herbig, when I talked to Alex Highsmith, when I talked to their position coach, Denzel Martin, all of them are like, TJ's coming, guys. Like, we're not sweating that he's not here right now. And also the notion that of him missing minicamp being this huge deal that destroys the team. I know that some people were really riled up about this. I think that then this is pure speculation on my point, but when TJ Watt got to go be an uncle for the first time, if you could have seen the joy and the pictures and the times that he talked about it and how happy he was, he had a kid, his first kid in mid-March. I fully believe that part of TJ was like, hey man, I'm okay skipping this stuff because I want to be a dad before I have to disappear for 6 months, you know, in the other formative like months of my newborn kids. So I think that that might have played a role into it, as well as him not showing up and knowing that, hey, we're going to get a deal done. I don't think that the sides were as far apart as some people made it out to be. I think TJ Watt wanted to be a dad. He knew he was getting his deal done. There were times Troy Polamalu didn't show up for things in the spring. He's been, and TJ Watt is that kind of a player. He's that good that you can be like, all right, show up in camp and we'll get to work. Now, to your point, Jason, about adding other people, yes, I do think they need to add a free safety. I really like Julian Blackman, the former Colts safety. He's about 27-ish years old, I believe. And I think he's a guy that could play on the back end and be solid. You know, won't be a game changer, but you're saying, hey, you're putting all your money up front in the cornerback position, so you're going to have to lighten up in the safety position. But I think he would be a good mix with what they have with Deshaun Elliott and Juan Thornhill. Wide receiver two is going to be tricky, though. I do think it's going to be interesting. You know, I'm not sure that the Niners are coming off Juwan Jennings so easily. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, other teams are just going to willingly give up their wide receivers. But Omar Khan's playing the game right now that you got to play. You got to be patient. You got to wait. You got to see who gets upset with their team in a couple weeks here or a month here when training camp's starting to wind down and they're realizing, hey, they are not paying me. You know what? I want to trade. I want to get out of here. And then you kind of see what deals you can get off of that. But don't jump at something just to jump at something, because the biggest thing here the Steelers realize is that the thing that they're saving up for is that quarterback move in 2026 in the draft. I think they're saving up for that, and they're saving up to be flexible to not only make that move but make other moves around it so that they can start to maximize that being their next real Super Bowl window.
Chris, you're the man. Thank you so much. Good stuff, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
There it is.
You know what that means. It's time for Ray Fittipaldo, and what a great day to have him. You can read Ray's stuff at postgazette.com. Ray, how are you today?
Good morning, Joe. I'm doing well.
Ray, brought to you by the Western Pennsylvania Injury Attorneys of LGKG, serving as your home team for over 90 years, LGKG.com. All right, Ray, let's get right to it. Who won here? TJ Watt or the Steelers? Who got the better of this deal? Who buckled, if anybody?
Yeah, hey, listen, Joe, I said this yesterday, and I'll repeat it here today on your show. I think it's a win-win. You know, the Steelers went beyond what they normally do. They guaranteed basically 3 of the 4 years, so $108 million guaranteed out of that $144 million. They've never done that before, but I think it speaks to how they feel about TJ Watt, not only the player, but the person. And for TJ, I mean, how can you be upset about it? You beat Myles Garrett's guarantee. Now, the annual value isn't $40 million a year, but that's okay. He got more money up front, and that's all these players care about.
Well, the annual value of the extension is $41 million per year, correct?
Yeah, but there's no extension, Joe. The Steelers don't do extensions with players. They just rip up the old deal and they do new contracts. So it's a new contract worth $144 million over 4 years, which puts it slightly above Max Crosby at 36, a little bit over $36 million a year. But like I said, Joe, it's all about the guarantees.
So the entire world is reporting this differently than you guys are? Because the entire world is doing what Adam Schefter did and saying that. How did he beat Myles Garrett then?
With the total guarantees.
Okay, I mean, people say he's the highest non-quarterback, highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the league at $41 million, that's incorrect?
Yeah, I mean, I know you're like me, so you probably failed math. That's why you're a sports writer like me. But divide 144 by 4, and you get 36.
So they tore up this year's contract? They tore it up. Okay. All right. Yeah. Then everything that everybody's reporting, Adam Schefter and everybody else, the $41 million per year average is the highest of any non-quarterback in NFL history, is incorrect, you're saying?
Correct. But he did beat him on the guarantees. I think if you look at Myles Garrett's guarantees, and I looked this up last night, Joe, he was guaranteed $60 million at signing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get that extra $40 million until the second day of the new league year in 2027. So they wrote the contract in a different way. I'm sure Miles will earn that money. I'm sure they're not going to get rid of him by 2027. But TJ did beat him in the guarantees. And like I said, that's all these players are worried about. They are not worried about the average annual value of the contract.
Oh, now wait a second. Wait a second. You better believe that TJ Watt wants it out there and considers himself to be $1 million more than Myles Garrett every year. I don't know. I work for the Post Gazette, so I respect the reporting here, but everybody in the world is saying that he's outdone Myles Garrett in terms of annual pay at $41 million. And whether that's right or not, based on technicalities, you better believe TJ's hanging on to that.
Yeah, the agent wants you to know that number. TJ doesn't. TJ cares about the guaranteed money. That's all he cares about.
I disagree. I think that TJ Watt is very, very happy to be making at least according to 99% of the reports out there, $41 million to Myles Garrett's $40 million. I think he enjoys that a whole lot.
Yeah, it's $41 million a year guaranteed over 3 years. I guess if you want to put it that way, you could put it that way.
I think so. TJ would. I just have to believe that TJ would put it that way. But we're parsing over the contract here, Ray. Forget about that part of it. What about his performance and his longevity? Do you believe in that?
Yeah, listen, they're betting on him to perform. He turns 31 in October. So 31, 32, 33 years old, those are the years he's guaranteeing. And if you look at, you know, the averages, and let's take out the torn pec year. Every other year, Joe, except for his rookie year, he's in double-digit sacks. He's forcing five or more fumbles per year. He had the one unbelievable year where he was, you know, 22 and a half sacks. So, you know, if he is not injured, I think he's, you know, the Steelers are guaranteed to get double-digit sacks out of him for the remainder of this contract. And I think if he's right, you know, you're probably talking 15, 16 a year based on what he's done in the past. Now, that comes with him changing his game this year, the Steelers changing their defense this year. Don't leave him in one place. That's all going to be part of it. But I don't think the Steelers are worried about TJ Watt getting old during this contract.
My opinion was that they should have traded him because I think that could have helped them in their pursuit of a franchise quarterback. And I think a franchise quarterback is more important than an edge rusher. Like I look at Watt and Myles Garrett, his buddy, combined, they're 1-6 with two total sacks in seven playoff games. I would have traded him. I like the term of this deal. Don't get me wrong. If I was forced to sign him, I was surprised that it was only 3 years tacked on here. I like that, but I would have traded him. What do you say to all that, Ray? What's your actual opinion of this from that standpoint? Would you have dealt him?
Yeah, I mean, Joe, I don't agree with you, but maybe I would under different circumstances. Let's say the Steelers had a franchise quarterback on their team right now that they had to pay upwards of $50 million a year to. Then, you know, maybe an edge rusher would be somewhat of a luxury, you know, but the Steelers are not in that position. The Cleveland Browns are not in that position. And really half the NFL doesn't have that worry of having to pay that franchise player. So you got to spend it somewhere. The Steelers always spend to the cap. And Joe, they've always been a team. And this is true under the new regime with Omar Khan and Andy Weidel. This has not changed. The Steelers are a draft and develop team. And if you're a player like TJ Watt, they want to keep signing you to new deals. So that's one thing. That's been a constant for the Steelers throughout the years. And I know Omar has made some changes, but that's one thing that he hasn't deviated from.
Do most NFL teams spend to the cap?
The vast majority. I don't think every single one of them do, but I think most teams that are serious about contending like the Steelers, yes, they allocate their resources. And if you look around the NFL, Joe, there's probably, what, 8 or 10 teams that have to pay that, say, $45 to $60 million a year for a quarterback. The Steelers aren't one of those teams right now. So they have the cash and they have the cap space to do deals like this one for TJ Watt.
I'm thinking about your statement that they're still a draft and develop team. I would have to look closer, but, man, it sure seems like a lot of guys come from the outside. Their quarterback, their best receiver. Patrick Queen, Darius Slay, Deshaun Elliott, Juan Thornhill, Jalen Ramsey. It doesn't seem like they're as much of one as they used to be. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, but let me clarify. When you draft a guy like TJ Watt, and maybe they're not drafting and developing as well as they should, but when you draft and develop a guy like TJ Watt, they don't let those types of guys get away. That was my larger point, Joe.
Unless they feel like you're underperforming, because they've certainly drafted a bunch of guys that they didn't keep, like, you know, whoever from George Pickens to Najee Harris to, you know, the list goes on, right?
Devin Bush, yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, you got to start drafting and developing better than they have over the last 6-7 years. That's we've talked about that a lot the last couple of years, for sure.
Ray Fittipaldo, Post-Gazette, on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. You can also get a hold of our dear friend Limits on the Fan text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. So what do you think then in the end of this very highly paid defense, Ray? Is it going to finally pay dividends in the games that matter? Are they going to get to the playoffs? Is this going to be a great defense? Where do you stand on this defense and all the money they're putting into it and the changes they've made?
Yeah, better. I mean, a lot has to come into fall into place for that to happen, Joe. You got to figure out what you're doing with TJ, how you line him up. What changes are you going to make at outside linebacker? That's going to be one of the more interesting storylines of training camp, I think, in the preseason. Now, they're not going to show their hand, I don't think, early in camp, but that is something to keep an eye on when the season starts. And then the bigger question is how does Jalen Ramsey fit? I think Jalen Ramsey, at the very least, is going to be as good as Minkah Fitzpatrick, but we don't know what role yet.
Yeah.
And he's 2 or 3 years older. So they have to figure that out. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're going to be a top 10 defense across the board in points and yards and all that stuff. But they better be top 12 or top 14 because there's still some question marks about that offense as well.
Top 12 or 14? They better be top 5 for the money they're spending, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the points can get away from you. You better be top 10 in either yards or points. Sometimes, you know, those stats get a little bit out of whack, you know, depending on game circumstances. But, you better be top 10 in points allowed or yards against if you're committing the way the Steelers have committed to Watt and all the moves they made this offseason.
I think top 5, but we can continue quibbling over things here, Ray. It makes for enjoyable radio. I think you could even argue top 3. I mean, how much more are they spending than any defense in the league, Limits?
Last year was $20 million more than the next closest.
I don't think that number's gone down.
Austin, what do you have up there? What were their numbers, points allowed, and yards against last season?
I'll pull that up, but last year they were at 127.7 in total cap and defensive spending, and the Bears were at 108.8. That's what I'm looking at there.
And I think the margin is even wider this year. I've got that right in front of me because I can look things up faster than Limits, Ray. And the Steelers were pretty low. What? No, no.
Wrong.
No, they
were 15th.
That's pretty low. In yards per game?
Yes, in yards per game, they were at 334.3.
No, they were 12th at 326.7, according to ESPN, defensively. I have 12th.
So.
And then in points.
And they were a little bit better points allowed, I think, right?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They were 8th. That's just, to me, that's not good enough. But the real point is, what happened in the playoffs again? They were last in yards and points allowed, right?
Yeah. And listen, if we would have looked at those numbers December 1st rather than January 1st, I bet you they would have been top 8 in points allowed and yards against. But we all know how the season ended. And you're right about the playoffs, Joe. None of what we're talking about matters if you go out and you lay an egg in the playoffs again. So they got to figure out – first, they got to get there, but they got to do – they got to figure out how to win a playoff game, and obviously the defense is going to be a big part of that.
That's unleashing hell in December there, right?
I mean, Mike Tomlin has talked about having a dominant defense and a great defense. Those numbers from last year, even in the regular season, don't speak of that to me. It just hasn't been good enough, Ray. It hasn't been good enough.
100% agree. And what we saw in December last year, that honestly, Joe, that can't happen again. And that's why we've seen all these changes. That's why Minka's gone. Ramsey's in. That's why they've made all these moves.
Do you think Ramsey's going to play a lot of safety?
I think that's definitely an option. I mean, I'm as curious as the next guy, Joe. I'm sure Terrell and Mike have a plan. You look at the roster, though, the biggest needs right now are free safety and slot corner. So you're basically saying, is Jalen Ramsey going to be better than Juan Thornhill in the back end, or is he going to be better than Beanie Bishop in the slot? And you got to make that call. But you also have the flexibility to change it up in sub packages. Maybe Beanie's going to be good in some sub packages. Maybe Juan Thornhill would be better in some others. So they're going to change it up a bit.
How would you grade Patrick Queen's season from last year? It seems that he doesn't give it a very high grade, and he thinks he's going to be a lot better. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. B minus, and I don't, you know, I don't like lay all the blame at his feet. There were a lot of moving parts last year. You know, Deshaun's safety was new in the back, and we all know the communication issues. There were a lot of new players playing different roles in that defense. But yeah, I would say a B minus or so. I thought, you know, he racked up the tackles, but I thought he could be better in pass coverage, and he's going to have to be better in pass coverage this year because he's still going to be there. They're a three-down linebacker. He's not going to come off the field, so he's got to get better in that regard.
Man, I'm just looking at this depth chart. I think there's a chance for the defense to be good, but I feel like I have so many questions, and they begin on the back end, really, with Joey Porter Jr. Do you think he's good? How does his career turn out? Is he a good player? Is he average? Is he going to be great? What is he?
I mean, right now, Joe, I would say he's slightly above average. But when you drafted a guy number 32 overall, I think the expectations are much higher. So, you know, they got to get him. I don't want to say he has to be an all-pro, but, you know, you got to hope that that guy can someday be a Pro Bowl-type player, produce more than one interception a season, you know. And that's really what they're working towards. You know, they want to get him better when the ball's in the air. They think he's pretty good, darn good at press man coverage and disrupting guys at the line of scrimmage. But obviously, there's a lot of shortcomings there with penalties when the ball's in the air and him playing the ball. That's what he's got to work on this summer.
Limits, leaving you out of this conversation would cause Ray to leave this segment hysterically weeping.
Oh, well, Ray, I don't want you to cry, but one thing that a lot of people are crying over, maybe it's just spilled milk, is one thing that I've kind of harped on more so than the last really couple of years is this year, and it is that defensive spending. Now, I feel like there are areas defensively maybe that they do splurge where they should sign a second wide receiver or they could bolster their depth on the offensive line. Do you think that that is a fair argument? And I know we touched on it a little bit, just that they need to prioritize offense more because that's just where the league has shifted.
Austin, to a certain extent, I agree with you, but I would make the argument, unless you have a franchise quarterback that you truly believe in, and they didn't have Aaron Rodgers in the fold until mid-June, so you have to kind of take that into account. But even with Aaron Rodgers, this is still going to be a team, I believe, that wins with defense. In the moment they get a franchise quarterback that they believe in, they should 100% try to build around him, get Pro Bowlers, all pros, receiver, running back, offensive line, and build around your quarterback. But they don't have that quite yet.
Limits, may I engage Ray in a game of free association?
Please, it's my favorite time of the day.
Ray, it's been a while. I know you're excited. You ready?
I'm ready.
Who has the better season, Aaron Rodgers, Kenny Pickett, Justin Fields, or Mr. Unlimited?
I will go with one, Aaron Rodgers.
Okay. Who has the better season? I'll say, you know, touchdowns, let's say. Touchdowns combined with yards. George Pickens or DK Metcalf?
You know, I'll go George because I think they're going to throw it a little bit more with Dak and with CD down there. Yeah, so I'll go George.
Who's going to get the bulk of the running back touches in the opener against the Jets?
Jalen Warren.
What's the best training camp battle?
There aren't that many, Joe. I mean, you could talk about Jalen Ramsey in the slot, but it's not a matter of him winning that position. It's just a matter of whether he's a free safety or the slot. So, I mean, other than that, the offensive line comes back intact. They've already named Derek Harmon a starter, so I don't think there's many positions that do have battles.
Wow. All right. Yeah, I guess you're right now that I think of it. Who has more catches, Jonnu Smith or Pat Freiermuth?
I will go with Jonnu Smith, but Pat will have more yards.
Who will have the most touchdowns?
Pat Freiermuth.
Aaron Rodgers has sung the praises of Mount Washington. Over, under 2.5 touchdown catches for Mr. Washington.
Under.
Who's going to be the most improved? Let's rephrase that. Who's going to be the best story among the offensive linemen?
The best story. Troy Fa'utanu. He's going to be a Pro Bowler if he stays healthy.
Is Broderick Jones going to succeed at left tackle this season?
I can't sit here and guarantee that, but I know that's the hope inside the building.
Peyton Wilson, he becomes a high-impact player or just an average linebacker?
No, I think so. He's a tremendous athlete, Joe. He proved he was a playmaker last year, and they're going to run him out there this summer and give him every opportunity to stay on the field at all times. So that's going to be another – talk about camp battles, maybe that's one. Peyton Wilson versus Malik Harrison. Can Peyton Wilson hold him off and be on the field full-time with Patrick Queen?
Who has a bigger impact on the offense? Maybe this is obvious to some, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Roman Wilson or Calvin Austin?
Calvin Austin.
Does he become a legit number two?
I don't know that you know, in people, what people believe is a true number two. But for the Steelers, yes, he'll be their number two receiver, but likely their number three or four target behind the tight end Smith and Freiermuth.
Midway through this season, are we looking back and saying, man, Roman Wilson was actually a pretty good pick, or are we saying this guy's on the verge of busting?
Somewhere in the middle. I'm not committed to either there.
Big impact from Bob Woods this season or no?
Nah.
Will Cordarrelle Patterson be on the team?
I mean, they usually give guys the benefit of the doubt, cut them in March if they don't have plans for them. So, yeah, I'm going to say he's going to be on the team.
What plans do they have for him?
I have no idea.
To throw him out there as a frozen cadaver against the Bengals and give him a pitch out on 3rd and 3 again?
That is going to be interesting, right? Because you got Caleb Johnson, you got Jalen Warren, you got Kenneth Gainwell now. How does Cordarrelle Patterson fit in? Maybe he doesn't make it. I don't know, Joe.
I'm just flummoxed.
What's the injury?
I'm flummoxed on that one. How about Connor Hayward?
Maybe they're keeping him. Maybe they're keeping Cordarrelle around in case there's an injury. Connor Hayward has a better chance than Cordarrelle because he can play special teams, but I'm not sure how much of a role a fourth tight end is going to have this year.
Thank you, Ray. I have no further questions. We appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Read about it at postgazette.com.
Thank you, Ray.
Thanks, guys. Remember, 108. Don't worry about $36 million a year, Joe.
I ain't the one who's worrying about it. But I can guarantee you TJ's happy when it gets phrased as $41 million.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they added it on, so I guess it's not a...
I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's a 3-year extension added on to what it was.
I don't know. I guess from the Steelers' side, they don't want people to think they give out extensions. And then, as Ray said, from the other side, they want it known that he beat Myles Garrett. The entire world is phrasing this as a 3-year contract extension worth right. $41 million a year. And right. at 41, that makes him the highest paid non-quarterback in history.
Right.
Whenever this happens, it seems like, and Jerry's a great reporter, that his story has a different headline than the whole rest of the planet.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, what he's basically doing is including this year in on the deal.
Well, because as Ray said, I guess technically they tore it up for a new... So the only place you'll read in America or the world this headline, TJ Watt to sign a new 4-year, $144 million deal with the Steelers is here. So maybe he's technically right. I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I'm confused at this point. That would completely negate the main storyline here.
Right.
Which is 41 million.
Yeah. Which he's going to be paid $41 million in 26, 27, 28. That is what I've gotten to if they're making it, they're changing the language of the contract maybe a little bit because they're probably giving him a signing bonus.
I don't know.
That's probably the only difference.
I don't know. I don't even want to speculate. Okay.
It doesn't matter. TJ Watt is getting a lot of money and he stays.
Oh, it matters. It matters more than anything whether TJ Watt is getting paid more than Myles Garrett. So basically what you're saying is the whole rest of the world, Schefter and every other person and outlet in the world is wrong that he's making more money per season than Myles Garrett at $41 million, that he eclipsed him 40 to 41. And the idea that TJ wouldn't like that and want that and think that's the case to me is preposterous.
Right.
That would have been probably his whole argument. Is, yeah, I want more guaranteed money. I'd also like to make more than him per season. He makes 40. Give me more. I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe he's right. Maybe Dulac's the technically correct here. I don't know. Okay, limits.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall.
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Coward spinning forward the story on TJ Watt. If you do want to get involved with today's show and you do want to sound off on whether you like the deal or not for TJ Watt yesterday, feel free to do that because that's still going to be evergreen. 412-928-9370. That's the fan text line and, of course, our phone number here, and it's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. If you haven't had a chance to sound off and you want to, you can do that. You know where I stand on it. My basic take on the contract itself, don't begrudge the player at all. Good for TJ Watt, got what he felt like he was worth. Didn't love it as a business move by the Steelers. Think it's bad business. Coward is the golf equivalent, since we've got the Open Championship on, of a guy in the radio business who is very good, very accomplished, does something that I think is very, very difficult to do. Does a, even with a big research team, Don, does a national show every day. How many hours? Two or three it is now at this point?
Three.
Three. I think he used to do four maybe at ESPN. But he does a solo show, and yes, he's got the guest booking and all that stuff, and he's got all the connections, and so to a certain degree, it's a little bit easier, and he has that Jason McIntyre guy on at times as a sounding board. But by and large, Cowherd can still go as a solo host. Hard to do. He could do it 300 days a year or whatever the heck it would be, 270 days a year. So he's like the golf equivalent of Scottie Scheffler, with one notable exception. It's if Scottie Scheffler struggled badly on 12-inch putts. How many times did he call him J.J. Watt just in that little version of the clip that I chopped up? Two or three? It's TJ.
At least two.
You got it half right. If you say J.J., you still got it 50% right, but that's a pretty easy distinction to remember. Thought that was funny. Always think that's funny. Cowherd has a habit of doing that. Very reasoned, well-thought-out, well-conceived take with usually a funny tie-in, or I guess it would be an allegory, perhaps, to real life, maybe a metaphor, and then he'll biff the name of the person he's talking about. But I think that's a good spin forward to start today. I think that's a good place to take the show to start here on a Friday in the summer, where we had our week of what we assumed would be minimal headlines interrupted by a major move by the Steelers, getting their best player on the defensive side of the ball, at least by reputation. I thought Cam Hayward was better last year. That's neither here nor there. Locked up to a deal that makes him happy. We'll have him showing up on time, and we'll have him in the right frame of mind. I think it's a good spin forward on this. And I think Colin Cowherd there, I played a minute 45 of that. It was about a 2.5, almost 3-minute clip. I played it for you to start the show because I think he's right. And I think that one of the things that I got lost in the shuffle with yesterday, I mean, it was react to the news in real time. Certainly wanted to just get basic thoughts about player and basic thoughts about the deal and the team's decision to do it out on paper. But it seems now like it was definitely more fait accompli that they were going to do something like this. I think the direction that he has taken it now is 100% true. This is a team that, with this deal, And one of the things that you could argue is, well, where else were they going to spend the money? Of course they were going to give him that money. But it is a continuation of what has been a theme for a while now under Mike Tomlin, a theme that has stretched out over two different GM regimes, the old one and the new one, that has been Tomlin and Art Rooney the second centric. Everybody else that's good, that's worth their salt in the NFL, they spend on defense. Or spend on offense, excuse me. Their defenses are young and cheap. And if they do a good job drafting, good. No team is going to be spending more on defense, a higher percentage of their cap per spot rack. I just looked it up before the show, than the Steelers. They're spending 49% of their dollars this year, their cap percentage, on defense. The Eagles, by contrast, just to point them out, reigning Super Bowl champions, guys who do it the right way, GM and Howie Roseman, who's a big smart guy. Check out the big brain on Howie. When I looked at their percentage, it was 20. They're an extreme. They do everything right. But most teams in the league that are good seem to be doing it in the 30-ish percentage range. They're certainly not spending basically 50-50 defense to offense, which makes sense, I think, in the NFL. It's an offensive league. The rules, as we have many times lamented in this defense-first city, where guys like James Harrison were the trailblazers at getting fined for illegal hits to the head, defense has been legislated mostly out of the game. You're never going to see a game that is played legally, that is played without flags, that resembles the 2008 AFC title game. Violence like an Extreme Rules John Cena-Brock Lesnar match. Hello, Donnie. Violence, really wanton violence. The league doesn't want that. They want offense. The league wants Patrick Mahomes upright, able-bodied, and playing late into the season. They don't want Josh Allen to get concussed. They don't want Lamar Jackson hurt when it comes to be playoff time. And the Steelers continue to swim against the current with this move. They continue to allocate big dollars to that side of the ball. They continue to do so for the foreseeable future. And while the counter argument is, well, aren't you supposed to load up? You've got a quarterback on a cheap deal. Next year, you're going to have presumably your quarterback of the future on a cheap rookie deal. Why wouldn't you do this? I'd agree. I'd say, yes, you should spend money elsewhere. You just shouldn't constantly be spending it on defensive players. And that's what they're doing. And that's what they have done. Because and I think it's still a through line. And I think this signing, this extension, is still sort of a sign that they think in a year where they're supposed to be quote-unquote all in, they can win it this way. They can do it this way. They're going to keep doing it this way. TJ Watt is the $41 million man. TJ Watt is the highest paid player on the team. We can work with that. We'll find the other stuff in the margins. And think of how silly that sounds, knowing what we know about the Steelers. They're not very ahead of the times offensively. They can't afford to skimp and say, well, we're so far ahead with how we do everything on the offensive side, we can afford to plug and play. No, they need to do the opposite. They need to get guys who are so overwhelmingly talented, excuse me, that they surmount a bad scheme or a mediocre scheme. I think Arthur Smith is a slightly above average offensive coordinator, maybe. They don't have a visionary back there, and yet they continue to spend on the other side of the ball. And Coward's right. They're not even that good in the games that count, in the games that are supposed to count, the playoff games. 41 points per game on average they've given up. Offense has helped them with some bad stuff in some of those games. Defense has more than done its share or not done its share to put up that big average. So they are doubling down, tripling down, whatever you want to call it, saying, yes, we love TJ Watt. That was yesterday's narrative. They love Watt. They believe in Watt. They think Watt's best days are still to come. And they're also saying to you, hey, you think we shouldn't spend on defense as much as we do. We disagree. We beg to differ. This is the side of the ball that we should be prioritizing. This is the side of the ball that's our bread and butter. Sure, the bread is moldy and the butter seems to have gone rancid by the time the playoffs roll around, but it's bread and butter nonetheless, and we're going to eat it. So I think what Colin Cowherd said there, that resonates with me. I think he's one of the best to do this job. I think he knows how to structure an argument. I think he knows how to do some analytical thought. I think he was right on the money there. Did I outsource it for myself on a Friday? Maybe. But he's making another good point. What do you make of the Steelers' continued focus on spending on the defensive side of the ball? Because $108 million guaranteed just went to a defensive player again. They have the highest cap percentage allocated to their defense this year. Again. The team that just won the Super Bowl has the lowest percentage allocated to their defense heading into this season. Huh. Isn't that funny? Are you okay with this Steelers approach continuing where the defensive side of the ball gets to be is prioritized, and the offense, they continue to just say, eh, we'll try to figure it out.
Top of the hour, I want to dive a little deeper into the coaching rankings that came out in the NFL and also the quarterback rankings. That was even more interesting to me because that came from executives, coaches, scouts in the NFL through ESPN. We talked about it, mentioned it briefly, just that Aaron Rodgers wasn't in the top 10 and was in also receiving votes. So let's dive in a little more to what we think of that, but also just the actual listing itself. I had a major, major problem with one of their picks, or should I say one of the guys they didn't pick for the top five. In the meantime, TJ Watt and your reaction out there started the show by being very, very interested in how the fan base really appears to be split, and that was borne out again in the calls early in the show. My point was and is that any other superstar player in his prime for any team in any sport in any city ever, the vast majority would be celebrating in the streets right now. That doesn't seem to be the case with TJ Watt, and I wonder if it's more about him or about the plight of the Steelers these days, where they haven't been competitive in a single playoff game since 2016. What is it? We've had a lot of theories, a lot of good calls so far, and I want to continue that at 412-928-9370. But first, I want you to hear what they're saying on Cleveland radio. Most of the world reporting that TJ Watt getting $41 million, which is, can't help but notice, slightly above $40 million on his three-year extension, more than Myles Garrett got on his contract. So what do we make of that, and what do they make of it in Cleveland? Let's take a listen. Limits, what station is this?
This is 92.3 The Fan. This is Nick Wilson, one of their afternoon drive hosts after the deal was announced.
TJ Watt signing a three-year, $123 million extension that includes $108 million. Myles getting a $40 million deal. TJ getting $41 million per year average. Good for you, TJ. Who's a big man, TJ? Aren't you a big, strong boy? Oh, don't you feel like a bigger man today? Oh, gosh, TJ, you got one more $1 million a year than Myles Garrett. Oh, gosh, this, maybe you'll stop throwing temper tantrums when you don't win every Defensive Player of the Year award, right? Maybe you won't cry as much when people point out that Myles Garrett, who's been to the playoffs twice in his career, have more playoffs wins than you, right? Maybe, TJ, you won't cry so hard every time somebody says nice about anything nice about some other defensive player that also happens to be a pass rusher in the NFL. I hope this, TJ, I hope this completes you as a person so that the rest of us don't have to hear you cry and whine.
What?
This irritated the hell out of me.
First of all, has this guy followed Myles Garrett his whole career?
The graveyard?
TJ put out the peace sign on Instagram. That was about all we heard from him. If you want to talk about people who cried and whined for a new contract and went to the length of toying with a fan base's emotions, that was Myles Garrett. I'll repeat his little statement to Ian Rapoport. You know, whatever it was, 6 months ago, quote, as a kid dreaming of the NFL, all I focused on was the ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl. And that goal fuels me today more than ever, Garrett wrote. My love for the community of Northeast Ohio and the incredible fan base of the Cleveland Browns has made this one of the toughest decisions of my life. These past 8 years have shaped me into the man I am today. While I've loved calling this city my home, my desire to win and compete on the biggest stages won't allow me to be complacent. The goal was never to go from Cleveland to Canton. It has always been to compete for and win a Super Bowl. With that in mind, I have requested to be traded from the Cleveland Browns. You talk about playing with people's emotions, your home fans, your fan base. And you compare that to Watt. And the other thing here is I never, ever, ever blame TJ Watt for wanting what he wanted. I've been consistent about that from day one. Would I have traded him? Yes. To the ends of bettering this franchise for the future and hopefully making that another step toward getting the franchise quarterback, who I think is more important than an edge rusher. But I could be wrong about that. That's A. B, more importantly, from TJ's side, he had every right to ask what he for what he got. I want to be higher paid than Myles Garrett. You know why? Because I'm better than him. And in every measurable category, pretty much, he is better than him. And he should have won Defensive Player of the Year a couple years ago. It was the first time that I ever remember in football voters using analytics to decide on defensive player, like deep analytics, Defensive Player of the Year. You had dinosaurs like Peter King. No offense, he's great, was great. Suddenly using pass rush rate and things like that to vault somebody over somebody else in a deserving year for TJ Watt. So this guy, what's his name?
Nick Wilson.
Nick Wilson should look at people in his own city, namely one guy, Myles Garrett, and all the crying and all the all how he played and toyed with his fan base there. But he's saying TJ Watt did this, and who could blame TJ Watt for wanting more money than Myles Garrett?
Considering,
I don't think there's anybody who blames him for wanting this, is there?
Not at all. Not at all, and neither should they. I was flabbergasted by this because they got to take off the rose-covered glasses to their savior, Myles Garrett.
That's rose-colored limits.
Whatever, I don't care. By the fact that if you look at every statistic that matters outside of PFF's insider numbers that we have to look at because, oh, Myles can really win off the line. He wins in every major category. Sacks, tackles, tackles for loss, interceptions is 7-0. Forced fumbles he has by 13. He's doubled his fumble recoveries than Garrett. If you look at it from an actual perspective where I don't understand how, and maybe this will come off as a homer take, we try to make this with the most logical and reasoned focus on this show, I think, and we separate everything and we have a good narrow belief of what's facts and what is reality and separate that from bias. And that's just a fact. That TJ Watt is a better player than Myles Garrett, and he does, in theory, deserve to ask for more money than Myles Garrett. Should he have gotten it because Cleveland is stupid and gave him more money than the market indicated he needed to get? That's here nor there. But I do think that just crying and saying, oh, well, TJ Watt complaining about this, complaining about that, it's a lot to do about nothing when Myles Garrett set the bar at requesting a trade in an entire statement compared to just a simple little peace sign with no contract.
I want to hear it again and pick it apart again. We had Devin McCourty on the other day saying TJ Watt's a better player. That's kind of beside the point, too. Myles Garrett signed his deal, and TJ wanted more than Myles Garrett. I would have, too. Well, I don't see in and of itself like why the mocking of TJ for wanting and getting more than Myles Garrett. Are we going to mock Micah Parsons when he gets more than both of them?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
And he's younger.
And in a couple years, if not sooner than that, somebody else will get more than all of them. And that's the way it works in the NFL. Let's hear that again, Limits.
TJ Watt signing a three-year, $123 million extension that includes $108 million. Myles getting a $40 million deal. TJ getting $41 million per year average. Good for you, TJ. Who's a big man, TJ? Aren't you a big, strong boy? Oh, don't you feel like a bigger man today? Oh, gosh, TJ, you got one more $1 million a year than Myles Garrett. Oh, gosh, this maybe you'll stop throwing temper tantrums when you don't win every Defensive Player of the Year award, right? Maybe you won't cry as much when people point out that Myles Garrett who's been to the playoffs twice in his career have more playoffs wins than you, right? Maybe, TJ, you won't cry so hard every time somebody says nice about anything nice about some other defensive player that also happens to be a pass rusher in the NFL. I hope this, TJ, I hope this completes you as a person so that the rest of us don't have to hear you cry and whine.
I actually think it's funny, but it's just extremely misguided. He makes it sound like Myles Garrett has been like a playoff legend or something.
Yeah, like he's Lawrence Taylor.
He has one sack in three games. Yes, they beat the Steelers that day. He had, as I recall, absolutely nothing to do with that.
No, like there was some troll that was in my mentions after I put out this tweet with all the numbers that said, oh, well, all that matters is that Myles Garrett is 1-0 against T.J. Watt in the playoffs. Yeah, Eli Manning is 2-0 against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Does that make him a better quarterback?
Yeah, it's just it's a one-game difference. And I don't know about these temper tantrums. I think TJ made it real clear that he deserved Defensive Player of the Year a couple years ago, and he did. And he did. Let's go back to the lines, Limits. If anybody, by the way, is now going to unite the fan base in supporting TJ Watt in this contract extension, it's the guy from Cleveland Radio.
Yep. Here is Paul in Washington, our friend, to start us off.
Hey, Paul.
Professor Starkey, pleasure to talk to you again.
You too.
I'll try not to go over the time, and I won't plant anyone in the audience. But who gives a rat's behind what that clown from Cleveland says? Really, who cares about the mistake by the lake? Let's talk about the Pied Piper that is Mike Tomlin and the tune that he is singing to Art Rooney Jr. and the rest of the ESPN, which is also known as the Eastern Socialist Progressive Network of Nutcakes, and what their opinions are of Mike Tomlin. We, the Pittsburgh Steelers fans, know he's done nothing. He has never done anything.
No, that's ridiculous. That's just stupid. He won with Cowers players. He won the Super Bowl. Super Bowl.
Joe.
Who did Cower win with Chuck Knoll's players?
I agree with that too, Joe. I agree with that too. But let's look at
Mike Tomlin. If you win, you win.
Joe, let's look at Mike Tomlin's draft history. That's all you have to look at. Joe, what are you going to do when Cam retires next year? What are you going to do when you're shorthanded on the
offensive line? What's your point overall?
The point is, TJ should have never got $41 million a year. I agree with you. They should have traded him. They should have packaged him with Tomlin, traded him to Chicago. End of story. Then we maybe get a winning team again and a winning tradition.
Well, we come to an agreement there in the end. And thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. Not sure where that one was eventually headed, Limits.
No, I don't know where our guy Paul was headed with that one. I don't know.
Yes, it should have been a new start.
Yeah.
The rock-bottom game, the humiliating game against the Ravens should have really jarred Art to action, but I'm not sure anything would jar Art to action. And it was a golden chance to start anew with a new coach, to absolutely get a first-round pick from the Chicago Bears, no less, in a trade for Tomlin, which I think you could have gotten, and then Watt, and you still have talent on this team, and then have a real restart next season instead of going for this, what I think is pie in the sky, all in with the likes of Darius Slay and people like that, and notably Aaron Rodgers, and Jalen Ramsey this season. I just don't think it's going to work. I think they're starting sort of a new next year anyway, new era. I think there was opportunity here to really, really make it a fresh start. And as I've said many times, a fresh start for Tomlin too. I think this was a great opportunity for him to go somewhere where the people just would have went crazy for him. He could have named his price there. Of course, he's already one of the five highest paid coaches, I think, in all of North American sports. It just felt like a natural break point, and the Steelers, Art didn't seize that opportunity. Maybe he'll be proven right in the end. But I got 8 years of high-end mediocrity to say he won't be proven right.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Well, I mean-
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
All right, happy Friday to you. I mean that. I sounded gruff. Happy Friday to you, brother. Sounded very, very gruff saying that, but hope you're having a relaxing one. Hope you're, hope you're blowing off work early and you're driving home right now listening to this show because you're starting the weekend early and you're going to kick it and relax. See, there's my peace offering. Chris, you're so mean. You hate the Steelers. You're a Browns fan. You didn't like the Watt deal. Blah, blah, blah. No. I want the best for you. That means you and all of my listeners. Well, most of them. Anyway, gaze upon the works of Mark Cabali, who will be in this building in like 45 minutes, and despair. The headline on his article, which of course he just publishes on X, the app formerly known as Twitter, the Everything app. Cabali: there is no gray area remaining for the Steelers following TJ Watt's extension. I said, okay, interesting. Cabali, first sentence, lead graph, J School 101, column writing 101. Catch him with a snappy lead. Intern Jack's running the board. I don't know if he or Donnie ever wanted to be a writer, but that's what they tell you. They say, catch him with a good lead, and then hit him with a good kicker, and they'll remember both of them. Cabali's lead, you can pretty much call it the perfect offseason for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Really, you can. I guess you can. I just don't think that's true. Cabali: it's hard to fathom when general manager Omar Khan, head coach Mike Tomlin, and Art Rooney II sat down together a few weeks ago after yet another embarrassing playoff performance 7 months ago and scratched out a plan for the upcoming season that everything they set out to do, they accomplished. That's a run-on sentence, but I'll let it go. What I wouldn't do to see the original plan now after they put a cap on their offseason Thursday by signing TJ Watt to a record-breaking contract that'll keep him with the team through the 2028 season, if that initial plan wasn't indeed how it turned out to be, everybody needs a raise. I'm sorry. I'm having perfect offseason. That's what we're going with. Not to be, like, a perfect offseason would be, what is it, Duke Tobin still running the Bengals? Steelers kidnap Duke Tobin, hold him for ransom, get Bengals to trade Joe Burrow to Steelers for 7th-round conditional pick. Let's recount the offseason, shall we? Let's, you know, make heads or tails of it. Okay, quarterback situation. The owner himself implied that he wanted one of Justin Fields or Russell Wilson back. Russell Wilson, it became obvious they didn't have much interest in. Justin Fields, however it shook out, the Jets offered him enough money that the Steelers didn't want to match that, didn't want to make Justin Fields their quarterback, didn't feel good about that. The owner and the head coach, I suspect, might have had very different opinions on how they wanted the quarterback search to go. Just a thought. Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback after the owner said he wanted one of the two guys who played quarterback last year. That saga dragged out, but ultimately it was more fun for us in the media business than it was humiliating for them. Rodgers signed. Rodgers showed up. Rodgers seems to be a happy camper. Gun to my head, I think Rodgers will be better than either of those other two guys would have been. Fine. Call that a net win. Najee Harris, they didn't make this mistake of keeping him around. Fine. Good. George Pickens, they decided to cut bait with him, traded him, got a decent return for him, then decided to use this year's second-round pick on DK Metcalf and promptly handed him what amounted to 2 years guaranteed at $31 million per. Okay, so Rodgers, goodbye George, hello DK, and now TJ Watt signed to a big boy deal. I don't know. Call me crazy here. Let's just say, for argument's sake, you're happy that the Watt deal got done. You just wanted to see it get done. You think it's going to have some sort of intangible benefit for the team. How is it the perfect offseason for the Steelers? What is their win total this year, Don? Do you remember? Throw it out there for me if you got it. The Steelers, what's their Vegas over-under? Was it 8.5? Was it 9.5? Where were we?
8.5, like it has been for like 5 years.
Have you checked it again today? Did you happen to look and see team futures over-unders? I would be willing to bet that after what Mark called a perfect offseason, their team win-loss total is exactly where it was when the offseason started, 8.5. I bet you none of the things they have done have moved that win-loss total number an inch. So I guess I'm scratching my head here at how you would call an offseason where they had to scramble to figure out their quarterback situation, occasionally felt like they were being twisted in the wind by Aaron Rodgers until he finally brought himself in here and signed on the dotted line. Had to trade, like, on what, I don't care, like, what you think of how they decided to backfill the position. Well, technically, obviously, the trade for Metcalf happened first, and then, of course, the George Pickens deal happened that later, so I should get my timelines right. They bring in Metcalf. People are wondering if they're going to try to really load up. They trade away Pickens. Okay? That is an admittance of failure on one level or another with Pickens. Metcalf, I think, is a good, sometimes very good receiver. I have misgivings about him as, like, an alpha dog number one. I think he's somewhere around, like, the 18th to 20th best receiver in football. We could play the who's better game and probably have a lot of fun with that. They bring him in. Okay, good. You filled in. You loaded up your room very briefly. Then you subtracted a guy that some people wanted to keep around here, and George Pickens. Where's the perfect offseason? What am I missing here? He also goes on, does Mark, to say, and we'll have it. The best part is we're going to have a chance to have Kabali in here in like 40 minutes, and I'll just say all this stuff right to him. He's almost certainly listening right now, so I'm sure he's sharpening his knives and preparing whatever arguments he can to counter me. He talked about how, as of last week, the two sides weren't close on guaranteed money, length of deal, and total value, that there are all these sticking points. Did we not read yesterday that this deal was in the works for a while, which suggests that the sides were actually pretty close and had been talking actively? When I hear that CAA and the Steelers were working on this deal for a while, that doesn't mean to me that it all came together, you know, slap, bang, boom here at the last second. That makes me think that they were probably doing fine for a while. So he writes, Watt gets his security. Steelers get the best edge rusher in the league. I would disagree. He's like second or third, probably second, maybe third, locked up heading into the season. He is giving them high marks for turning a potentially difficult negotiation into something that's a non-issue. And then he eventually gets to the fact that now the difficult part happens and you've got to put up or shut up. He said they have a better roster than they did when they got thumped in Baltimore in a playoff game in early January. They are significantly better, and there's no debating that. Don, I need you to get back on the mic. Does this team look significantly better to you? Subtract Minka, add Jalen, add Jonnu. I think that is a net positive. I'm not a complete hater. I think two good players for one guy who should be better than both of them, but probably isn't anymore, at least the way they were using him. Okay. Metcalf is better than Pickens, but you still took Pickens out of that picture. Caleb Johnson, I hope, is better than Najee Harris, but you drafted a guy who in physical build resembles Najee Harris. The guy, I guess I would want to know how people feel about this being a significantly better roster. I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
I think they are better. I wouldn't use significantly.
Significantly like better significantly, implies you think they're going to win a playoff game or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm also going from how they were 10-7 last year. If I'm saying significantly better, then I would think they're going to go like 14-3 this year. Instead, I'm going to go with 11-6.
Man, he's writing stuff in here that makes it seem like he thinks he buys the all-in stuff. Seriously, there's no gray area left for this organization. They took care of that by the players they added and the pedigree that comes with them. Do I have to tap the if Aaron Rodgers was still 2021 MVP Aaron Rodgers, he wouldn't have been available for like $13 million sign again? Do I have to don't make me hit the sign, folks. Listen, I think that they are better than they ended last year. I have to cross my fingers and hope that Broderick Jones is better at the position he was supposed to play. I have to hope that Aaron Rodgers is energized going into a season, and I am. I am hopeful about Rodgers. That because this is his last year and everybody knows it's his last year, there's going to be better vibes than there were with Russell Wilson. Still, though, he was available for a reason. Did they get better in the Minka trade? Yeah. I doubt their win total has moved. My expectations really aren't changed. I guess I feel like because of Rodgers' name recognition that if they get to the playoffs, they have more of a puncher's chance than they have with some of these other guys in the past. But let's be real. One of the big problems with Rodgers, even when he was putting up huge numbers in those late years in Green Bay, was that he folded up in the playoffs and didn't play well. Do you agree with Mark Cabali? The lead sentence here, you can pretty much call it the perfect offseason for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do you agree with Kaboom, who says they had a perfect offseason? If you don't, tell me why. How would you characterize it? I'd say they had a tumultuous offseason. It was a lot of activity. I'm not sure they got any better. It was like a boxer just throwing punches everywhere. I'm not sure how many of them landed. A flurry of activity, improvement, that's another story. 4-1.
Joining us right now on the Fan Morning Show is our man, Jeff Hathorn. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm sorry if my eyes go up this way because there might be a golf tournament on or something like that.
Yeah, we got it on in the background, too, so I don't blame you, Jeff. This is one of Pat's favorite events, favorite golf events.
Love the Open, Jeff. I'm sure you do as well as a golf aficionado.
The beauty of the Open is you could watch the final round and then go get 18 in. It's like you feel like you're on the West Coast.
Exactly.
It's awesome. You still have your day in front of you after the Open is over.
Jeff, do you expect TJ Watt to report to training camp?
Man, you know, I think I could speak for all of us that cover the Steelers. I think we expected him there at minicamp. And to say that any of us know 100% that he's going to be there for training camp, I don't think is accurate. I mean, he shows up, he loses leverage. I don't think he's going to. Just based on the fact he didn't show up at mandatory minicamp. I think this thing is going to drag out. I still think they'll get it done, but I don't expect him at the beginning of minicamp or of training camp.
Jeff, the Pirates made a trade, Adam Frazier, for a AAA prospect. Do you expect, as Noah Hiles has reported, there to be a lot of action by Ben Cherington and the Pirates leading up to the July 31st deadline?
I do. I think a lot of these players are going to be changing addresses. I'm not as excited as some people are about Mitch Keller. I think Mitch brings a veteran presence to that group. I don't know what the get back would be. If it's for lower minor leaguers, I'm not for it at all. If it's for something that can help immediately, okay, I could see the trade, but I'm not like, hey, gung-ho, let's trade this guy. I will say I did talk to somebody in New York yesterday who was asking me stuff about Cabrian Hayes because from his sources, he's told if the Yankees don't get Suarez, they're coming after Cabrian Hayes.
Have you heard about anybody else? What about Mitch Keller, David Bednar, Santana? Are they going to be legitimately on the trade block as we approach the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think so. I think any of the guys on the one-year contract, obviously, you know, the ICAVs, FAMs, Heaney, that's going to – but I think anybody but Reynolds, obviously Skeens. I don't think Cruz is on the block, but I think they'll listen. And I don't necessarily think it's because Cherington knows his job is very tedious right now of where he stands with the Pirates. But I've got to imagine that's factoring in that, man, I've got to do something. I got to bring something in to change their mind or change this club more importantly than his job. And I think we are going to see something. I think the one thing is there are so many teams that can say that they're in the race. I think that'll create some competition. Normally, you get the best trades in the offseason because everybody's involved. But I think there's going to be so many teams. You might have two desperate enough teams that are, you know, battling against each other. The Pirates could get something good.
Jeff, Steelers report training camp 6 days from today, July 23rd. Besides TJ Watt and Aaron Rodgers, what are your biggest storylines heading into training camp 2025 at St. Vincent?
Yeah, how do the tight ends line up? Like, are they both going to be wide? Or I'm like, how is that combination going to work with Jonnu? And to me, like, where do you put Jalen Ramsey? Like, does Slay immediately become an extra? Do Can Slay move inside? We know that Ramsey's played some in the slot. Could Ramsey play a little safety? Like, how do you get your best players on the field in the secondary? That, to me, is going to be fascinating. The different combinations they're going to run and what they might do with Ramsey back there. Because you know Ramsey's going to play. You think Slay's going to be a part of this. But how is that combination going to work? Because you know Joey's going to have one corner locked down.
Jeff, did you like the swing off in the All-Star game? And could you see that being a format of extra innings moving forward for Major League Baseball?
I loved it in the All-Star game, but would hate it for a game. You're playing a game, play the game. Like, finish the game. And you already have the gimmicky ghost runner at second.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's that's even too far for me. I just want them to keep playing the game. I don't want to see games decided by home run contests because, in essence, it could give, once again, give big markets, you know, teams with three boppers as opposed to a team that busted its tail for nine innings to get it into extra innings, but they don't have the home run hitters. And to lose a home run derby, to lose a game, a real game, no.
Jeff, I believe it was you. I'm actually 100% sure it was you that said that you would make O'Neill Cruz, you'd be interested in making O'Neill Cruz one of the highest paid players in Pirates history. I want to pivot. This isn't about that comment. This is about O'Neill Cruz. I also saw, because the country got to see him in the home run derby and see the talent that is O'Neill Cruz. And there were some analyst pundits out there saying that Pittsburgh is just, quote, too hard on him. Is Pittsburgh, the media fans, too hard on O'Neill Cruz, or do we just see him every day?
I think we just see him every day. I don't know that they're necessarily too hard on him. I think that there's expectations on him because you look at him and see what he might be. And I think that's the essence of what I'm saying. Like, this guy still could be a 30-30 guy, and most people would look at his season and say he stunk, but he was a 30-30 guy. Right. He has really the chance to be a 30-50 guy this year. That's insane. Those are insane numbers, but you'll look at the one time he didn't hustle on this, or he didn't run this out, or he strikes out too much. Power hitter strike out, like, that stuff doesn't bother me. I just look at the insane athleticism, and I've heard from guys like Kevin Young, who teaches hitting, who has been in organizations, who helps out in those situations, who says he sees tangible improvement in what O'Neill Cruz is doing, especially his pitch recognition. That doesn't mean he's perfect. That doesn't mean he's figured it out. But he said, we haven't seen the results of some of the things that he has improved on. That's what I like about O'Neill Cruz, because, listen, Pat, you're never going to be able to trade for somebody like him. You'll never be able to afford somebody like him in free agency. You got him now. Maybe you can convince him, like, hey, we're going to give you some guaranteed money here, but you're going to stay with us for a couple more years.
Jeff, thank you. It was nice talking to you, man.
Thank you, boys. And hey, by the way, I heard Quiz Callis. I think that maybe Harry Callis should be the guy that determines conferences, because some of the ones he was saying made more sense than the conferences that exist today.
That is true. That
right. Iowa should be in the SEC.
Let him be in charge of the NCAA and say, okay, this team should be here, this team should be there, because I think he makes more sense than the way it is now.
Yeah, in a number of ways, Jeff, you're absolutely right. Good point by you.
Iowa in the SEC. Yes. Yeah.
The Mississippi Thanks, State
Not
Bulldogs
all,
visit
most of them.
Kinnick Stadium.
Mississippi.
For an SEC clash.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, boys.
Thanks, Enjoy Carl. Open.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.